Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. The issue of elementary school class size is back in the news in North Carolina. As many folks have heard, the General Assembly has passed a law requiring school districts to substantially lower class sizes in grades K through 3, beginning with the 2018-19 school year. The problem is that lawmakers failed to provide local districts with the operating and capital funds necessary to pay for the change, and now districts may have to fire art, music, and PE teachers and cram more kids into upper grade classes to make the scheme work. Renee Seckel is a Cary, North Carolina mom who is angry and frustrated about this development. Recently, we talked to her about her efforts to get the General Assembly to rethink its class size mandate. Well, Renee Seckel, welcome to News and Views. Thanks for joining us.
It's my pleasure.
You know, we're all familiar with the phenomenon of parents becoming active in their kids' schools. It most typically happens at the local level or at the local district level. But your group, Save Our Schools, North Carolina Parents for Public Schooling, is in the middle of one of the biggest controversies to bring out widespread parent activism at the state level. And the issue is the class size controversy.
Sure. Unfortunately, I say nothing short. Basically, in 2016, the legislature passed a law reducing class sizes in grades K through 3 significantly. So, for instance, they're aiming for a class size of 16 in first grade. Now, that's fine as far as it goes, but if you read the law, they've written it in such a way that it precludes the possibility of funding specialists. What I mean by that is there are certain, I call them buckets, for education funding. There is a bucket for teachers. Since at least the 1990s, that bucket has included funding for all teachers. That means art, music, PE, and classroom teachers. When they made the class size law, they said, well, we're going to fund you at a ratio of, for example, in first grade, one teacher for every 16 students. But that means that your classrooms have to have one teacher for every 16 students. Well, if your ratio matches the mandated class size, there is literally no space with which to pay specialists. Traditionally, there's a gap. If they fund at a rate of 1 to 16, then you maybe have 20 kids in a classroom. And that space between 16 and 20 kids is where you pay for your music teacher, art teacher, music teacher. In eliminating that gap, they've eliminated the possibility of paying for specialists, art, music, and PE specials.
Right. So it's fair to say basically they've mandated class size reductions, but they ain't paying for it. They're
correct.
Not giving the money to the local school districts to pay for it. And so the school districts are having to look elsewhere, either by doing away with these special teachers or maybe even increasing class size in some of the upper grades. I understand that's also on the table.
Yeah, there's a whole panoply of options and none of them are good. So we're seeing, yes, increases in class sizes in grades 4 through 12. We are seeing the option of cramming more than one class into a single classroom. So you might have two teachers for 32 kids, but you still got 32 kids in a classroom that's not meant to hold 32 kids.
Technically would meet the 1 to 16 ratio, but obviously is not we really have in mind with a 1 to 16
ratio. Sure, fits the letter, but not the spirit.
Right. So what's the timing on all this? This was passed, as you say, back in 16.
Yep.
We've been hearing about it. It's coming. It's not here yet? Or what's the status of things?
It's partially here yet. Last year, when they passed HB 13, it started out as basically a full rollback of the class size law. It turned into a partial rollback and partial just kicking the can down the road. Right. So my kids' school has lost specialists this year because of these reduced class size requirements. So functionally, I have a 6-year-old son. He gets PE twice a month because they don't have specials every day.
They're basically just fewer special teachers at your child's school.
Yes. We're a large school. We used to have one full-time and one part-time for each special. We've now lost all of our part-timers.
So this literally means that these special teachers, again, we're talking about art, PE, music teachers, are going to lose their jobs, right?
Yeah.
A lot of them are going to lose their jobs. How many are we talking about across the state, do we think?
Up to 5,500 across the state.
This is something I think most of us who went to public school sort of took for granted in most places, the idea of a PE teacher, the idea of an art teacher, a music teacher. You're telling me now that this is going to become essentially a rarity in a lot of our public schools in North Carolina as a result of this change that's going into effect.
Yeah, and it's almost hard to believe. And I think part of the reason so many people aren't paying attention is because it hasn't happened to them yet. Unless the legislature acts, and very soon, this is going to start happening in July when Wake County kids go back to school, in September or August when most of the other kids go back to school. They're going to walk into their buildings and wonder what happened. And then they're going to get mad. And what we're trying to do is fix it before the massive damage occurs.
What do you think the theory is, the ideology behind this? I mean, again, we all acknowledge that lower class sizes are a good idea. Do you have any theory on why they've approached it in this particular way?
I have a couple of theories. I think that, look, there are people on both sides of the aisle that are very serious about education and who want kids to have a good education. There are one or two in particular with whom I communicate that really are serious, and they think that there's a way to do this. And to their credit, they're really angry that the General Assembly has chosen this particular way to decrease class sizes. I think many of them think class size reduction sounds great, and they didn't think any further than that. They said, hey, I'll vote for it. And a lot of them last year, you saw a lot of legislators saying, oh, we didn't mean to do that. This is an unintended consequence. I think for many of them, that's true. Unfortunately, they're not fixing the problem that they inadvertently caused. Unfortunately, I also think that there's at least a small cadre of leadership that is not particularly fond of the concept of public schooling. And if they can harm public schools, they will. I think to a certain extent, some of those folks are driving the bus right now.
That's a worrisome trend. I think we have seen this before. There's a notion that some of the folks on the ideological right genuinely want to remake the education system in our state and turn it much more into a privatized system and have a lot of skepticism about the very idea of public education. And so they're not opposed to the idea of actually undermining public education sort of in a backhanded way. So why you? How'd you become involved in this fight?
By accident. I have a friend who was our board advisory committee representative for Davis Drive Elementary. She couldn't go to a meeting and she sent me. And when I was there, my Wake County board representative, Bill Fletcher, talked about this issue. And he said, look, this is basically it's a train coming at us. That's not a quote. It's just, you know, the impression I was left with. So I went back to my PTA and said, we have to do something. And we had a PTA meeting. We actually got some people to come. And they suggested that I start a Facebook group so that we could all be involved. And since it's not just a Davis Drive problem, it's not just a Wake County problem, this has effects throughout the state. It has grown. And we're just trying to get it fixed.
And so what has been the response from the parents you've talked to and been organizing in recent months?
Yeah, there's a lot of disbelief. People really don't want to believe that this is actually happening. You know, they want to believe that a mistake was made. They want to believe that somebody will take care of this. Of course somebody will take care of this. And there's, I think, for me personally, and I think with a lot of us, there's a sense of betrayal. We asked them to take care of this. They said it was a mistake, but they didn't fix it. It's been almost a year that we've been begging them to please fix this problem. It's so simple, and they don't. You know, you're messing with our kids. I spoke to one Republican senator who was talking about tax cuts and why we need to do this right now because eventually it will be good. But what he doesn't seem to realize is that while he's waiting for the trickle-down fairy to come, our children are getting hurt. And it's not okay to let kids, years and years worth of kids, get a substandard education while you wait for an economic effect that may or may not ever happen.
The theory being that if they cut taxes, that therefore that'll drive the economy and then there'll be more revenue to do these kinds of things.
Correct. Not that that's ever worked in, the history of our country. But, you know, fine, if you want to have that ideological conversation, but you have to think of who's getting hurt in the meantime. And it is not okay to mess with our kids' education while you're waiting for something to happen.
So tell us exactly what it is that you're asking lawmakers to do.
At this point, I just want it repealed. I'm done asking for them to provide the funding because you know they're not going to provide full funding. There's an issue of space. So even if they did provide full funding on January 10th when they come back in, you still have the problem of losing those rooms, art rooms, music rooms, and having them on a cart. It feels to me like anything short of a repeal is saying, oh, kick us in the shins instead of kicking us in other places.
If people want to, you know, maybe they're not already in your Facebook group, how will they learn more about your efforts and perhaps become more involved in this?
Well, there's so much you can do. First off, we have a website now, thanks to one of our amazing members, Susan Book. It's www.saveourschoolsnc.org. Also, on January 9th, there's going to be a tweet storm, and I believe that's from 4 to 6 p.m., and really all you do is you tweet your legislators, and you say, we need you to fix hashtag class size chaos. Make sure that they know we're paying attention. And then on January 10th, come on out to the legislature between 9 and 1 p.m. Public Schools First NC and the Wake County PTA will have a table set up in the lobby, and they will send you up to talk to some legislators. Those are really great opportunities. Last April was the first time I participated in one of those. I didn't know you could walk into the legislature and talk to people. I just didn't. It never occurred to me. So it's wonderful to have these opportunities to come in, meet some legislators face-to-face. You realize they are human beings, for better or for worse. And it gives you a sense that you personally have a story to tell and you personally have some power.
Well, much good luck going forward with these efforts. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your having me on.
Well, that's it for this edition of News and Views. For producer Clayton Henkel, this is Rob Schofield. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you again next week.
You've been listening to News and Views. A weekly look at state and policy issues is a production of North Carolina Policy Watch. Visit them online at ncpolicywatch.com.